well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a wonderful Easter weekend. Had a chance to hang out with my family. It was good. It was a mostly sunny day. Kids are too old for Easter egg hunts now, and Easter baskets for that matter. But it was still a wonderful weekend, and I hope that it was the same for you. Now, listen, I know that today is April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. As somebody who works in the media, I hate this day. More specifically, I hate the media outlets that decide, oh, you know what? Today's April Fool's Day, so I can just, you know, go ahead and post whatever. We're not going to do that at Bearing Arms. In fact, on today's show, we're not fooling at all. We're talking about something that is very, very serious, and that is mental health and the crisis of suicide in this country. Eddie Davenport, who you might remember from History Channel's Mountain Man Ultimate Marksman competition a couple of years ago, he won that competition. He has a post at Bearing Arms today talking about how a gun saved his life when one nearly took it as well. Eddie is on the board of Walk the Talk America. He joins me today alongside Walk the Talk America's Mike Sedini to talk about not only his own experience, but what he has done since that dark night of the soul, since that moment of crisis, what he is doing now, what Walk the Talk America is doing to help gun owners be safe, to live to see another day, to grow and to become stronger and better men and women. It is it's a difficult conversation at times, but it's an important conversation to have. And I really do appreciate Eddie and Mike joining me on the program. Take a look and a listen. Eddie and Mike, thank you both so much for coming on the show today. It's really good talking with you guys.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Cam. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, Eddie, listen, I want to thank you in particular for sharing your story and for letting us run this at Bearing Arms. And I want to ask, you know, you've been involved with Walk the Talk America for a while. You have been doing work as a counselor, trying to help others for a while. What made you decide that you wanted to actually write down your story and share it with the world?
Part of it was just talking with friends this past year when I was at Dallas Safari Club and I went to a SHOT Show and just talking to a couple of friends and, you know, people, okay, the real story is when I was at SHOT Show, I was at an industry party for Zero Tech, and I met a guy there that I don't want to put his stuff out there yet because he's, you know, not ready to give his full story, but similar story, you know, competition shooter, was a firefighter, struggled hard with PTSD and all the stuff with, so we're kind of like, you know, going back and forth and like, hey, these are the things that we struggle with. And with me, well, where he was at, he wasn't comfortable sharing his stuff out yet because he's still actively working in the services. And with me being out of it, I was like, I don't really have anything to lose. My story's somewhat out there already through podcasts. If you listen to everything, you can kind of piece it together. I was like, why don't I just put the whole story together? And part of it was, this was kind of the final thing I need to do to get past that stage. I mean, when to this day, I can read that article and I still tear up at the end. I mean, it still hits me, even though I'm the one that wrote the article. So I need to get the final piece out there, I think, to just finally get over that hump all these years later.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, and as you know, it's not even sometimes that you're able to put it behind you, right? This is something you carry all of these experiences with you, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that in putting it out there into the world, again, there are others who can help carry that weight. And that weight does get lifted a little bit because you are able to work through that experience. And I just know personally, you know, in dealing with some of the more traumatic experiences of my life, it's not that they ever go away, right? You, in fact, sometimes it can be a bright sunny day. You can be enjoying yourself. And all of a sudden your brain will say, remember the worst moment of your life ever? Let's go back to that. And let's, you know, and so it's not about just glossing over what happened or pretending that it didn't happen. And Mike, help me out here, right? I mean, there is value not only in sharing your story to help others, but there is value in sharing your story to help yourself too.
Oh, 100%. It becomes therapeutic. I want to hit on what you said. One of the most important things that we do in the 2A community, people who love freedom, you know, all of us gun people, right? it is important that we are vocal about these things and we talk about these things. Because the more we talk about it collectively as a group amongst each other, the more comfortable we are about it, the more that we can demand that we shouldn't have our right to counseling during crisis be restricted, right? Like, these are the things, it really gives us strength as a whole. Like, because for many years, I feel like we kind of just let it be a combat vet thing, right? Like, everybody in the firearms industry knew that, like, combat vets were good at circling the wagons with themselves. And we always appreciate that, right? But the gun community as a whole, we denied ourselves that right to talk about the things that upset us, because by nature, everyone in the gun community is supposed to be tough. You know, it is what it is, right? Like, we're protectors, we're sheepdogs, like those type of things. And like, people like Eddie out there sharing his story, making it okay for others to hear it and be like, well, yeah, I went through something like that before. That also helping other people becomes therapeutic, right? So Eddie getting it off his shoulders might make him feel better when somebody starts to confide in him about the same type of thing. So I totally agree with you.
You know, and one of the things that you talk about, Eddie, is the, and you mentioned again, your friend who is still, you know, very much active in as a first responder. Is there a double burden, you think, not only within the gun community, but then you get into, again, first responders, and you also have that expectation of mental toughness, right? You can't let these things get you down. You've got to move on. How hard is that for, you know, our firefighters, our police officers, our paramedics, our EMTs to have, again, that sort of expectation of, well, you got to let this stuff roll off of you?
It's hard. I mean, I mentioned in the article that, like, it's this, we're raised up as these heroes. I mean, in today's climate, it's you either we all talk about, there's good cops, bad cops, good EMTs, good, well, it's usually the cops that catch the brunt of the issue. But but we are raised up kind of like, you're these heroes, you're the people that run into danger and everyone else runs away. And you know what? You kind of believe it yourself. I mean, in a way, it's a big ego boost. I mean, not gonna lie, I always enjoyed running into a burning house because it was fun. I mean, there was definitely a lot of like stuff I saw of it, but I mean, it's definitely an adrenaline dump to do these things, and like with all the stuff that comes with it, then trying to deal with the stuff afterwards. And a lot of times we don't have times. Like when I was working the ambulances, there was 12-hour shifts, and you know, you'd take a call, you take whatever it was to the hospital, then you know you may get like a 5-minute break maybe, to, but sometimes it's like certain cities I worked in, it was, you know, condition zero. So like as soon as you dropped off a patient, you had to go right back out to a 911 call because there was calls stacked up you just had to get to, so you had no time just to process what was going on. And then I mean I touched on it, and like I'm trying to work with a local some local units, and it's slow going, not because of any reasons they're slowing it down. It is what it is. It's logistics. But we do know that like, if you go out and you seek help, it does come back to backfire at times. Certain departments are better than others, but it definitely, you know, it's still the whole stigma of, hey man, that guy's crazy, or like whatever. Like if you start talking about, hey, like I'm having these thoughts go in my head, maybe the guy that's there doesn't trust you. I mean, I've worked with some people that 100% I believe was trying to kill people who were, you know, just trying to seek help because they believe the guy was crazy. When I say, but I'm like, not send them back up, not bringing them out of the fire in time, stuff like that, between police and fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and Mike, I mean, this is one of the things that has to be, I imagine, one of the biggest frustrations of what you do and what Walk the Talk America does, right? Because we're trying to tear down those walls. We're trying to remove that stigma. We want people to be able to, you know, again, if they're feeling that stress, if they're feeling that burden on their shoulders, we want them to be able to reach out to somebody, right? But again, with the legislation, the regulations that we have in this country, there is just this, I think there's not only this fear that if you speak up professionally, there are going to be consequences, but again, as gun owners, how's this going to backfire on me? If I reach out to get help, what are the unintended consequences going to be on my life? And is it going to make my life worse?
100%. And this is exactly why we have to be more vocal and come forward, right? And I get it. Not everybody has the time to do what Walk the Talk America does, right? Like, this is a full-time job for many of us and people like Eddie who volunteer. But This is why it's important that we have a seat at the table, because there are so many people out there that work in healthcare or work in government that don't even think about the unintentional consequences of some of these feel-good legislation, some of these feel-good laws that they put forward, thinking is actually going to reduce the negative outcomes of firearms, right? I'll give you an example. I was asked to speak at the Aspen Institute of Health, right? And I went up there and I was speaking, and they warned me. You know, they warned me. They said, look, this crowd's not very gun friendly. But it was really interesting because I was on a panel and the discussion of red flag laws came up. And of course, everybody on the panel was super pro red flag law. And it came to me at the very end. And I remember saying, hey, I live in a different world than these two do. I live in a world where red flag laws actually probably get people killed. And I can see the crowd, like literally, like, you know, I always gauge the crowd of whether they're nodding, they look angry, or they lean forward, like they want more information, right? Like, what is this guy saying? And I saw a lot of people leaning forward, like, what does that mean? I explained to him, I said, if I had a dollar for every time someone contacted Walk the Talk America and said, I want to get help, I'm in crisis, I want to get help, but I'm so afraid, I don't think I can because I live in this state and there's a red flag law, said I wouldn't have to ask people for money, right? Like, and it was crazy because I saw nodding. I saw the nodding of the heads in the crowd. Well, I was walking around the campus the next couple of days enjoying the whole festival, right? Like the whole meeting. And people were stopping me. And they're like, hey, man, I saw you speak the other day at the event. And I just want to tell you, like, I'm not a gun person, but I never thought about that. I never thought about the unintentional consequence. I just thought you guys wanted to arm everybody, right? And then that's the moment when I was like, this is why it's so important for us to come forward and talk about these things, because there's so many people that are maybe gun neutral or maybe a little anti-gun, but they're not thinking, and it hasn't been explained to them in a way where they see that this stuff could be dangerous.
Yeah. Well, and they're not hearing from gun owners, right? They're hearing about gun owners from people who aren't gun owners and from people who don't like gun owners, right? And they're the ones who are defining us if we're not doing what you're doing, if we're not, you know, putting ourselves out there, if we're not doing what Eddie is doing and, you know, showing the world that, hey, you know what? Gun owners aren't trying to brush this problem under the rug. Gun owners aren't uncaring, right? We're humans. We grieve. We mourn. We get upset when our friends die unexpectedly. We get upset when we lose somebody that we love, you know, and we are trying to save lives. But it's why many of us own firearms in the first place, right? To save lives. And so, of course, we want to save the lives of those folks who are struggling. But they don't get that perspective unless we're the ones to give them that perspective. They're not going to get it from every town. They're not going to get it from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, right? They're not going to get that perspective because they don't want to put out that perspective that gets in the way of their agenda. And one of the things, Eddie, that you said in your column that I think this might be just the most important thing that I have read on this topic in some time. And it was just a really simple bit of advice about put a photo or a reminder of something that you love there on your gun safe, your gun cabinet. If you are struggling, when you let those dark thoughts, you know, intercede and you go to that gun cabinet, you're going to see a picture. Maybe it's your dog, right? Maybe it's your daughter. Maybe it's your best friend. Maybe it's a Walk the Talk America sticker. But there's going to be that reminder of, hey, this is what's worth it, right? This is why you hang on for another minute or 5 minutes or an hour. And this is why you call your friend who says, call me if you ever need to talk. Right. You just get that little slap in the face of reality. And I thought that was so important when you offered that up as advice.
I wish I could say that was my idea, but it's that was actually Rob Pincus's idea. It's his cause of pulse thing. It's I would love to take it as mine, but I mean, it is free advice I share out with all my clients and stuff, because that's something that you can change right now. And the reason, like, I want to think it's important that you said, you know, maybe it's your dog, maybe it's your daughter. Cause like some people say, oh, I'll just put my family up there. Maybe it's your family, the one that's kind of putting you in crisis. Maybe it's your wife's divorcing you and you have a picture of your wife up there. And that's not the one that's going to stop you in the moment. Maybe it's your kid who's driving you nuts, or for whatever it is, it's put something on there that means something to you. I mean, on my safe, I have that tons of pictures. Okay. That's where I, all the gun stuff I ever get just goes on my safe. But I mean, that's on the inside of it. I have a specific picture of my dogs, and I'm the outside of a picture of my WTTA. That doesn't mean that my wife isn't the one that like would help bring me out of crisis, because she does. But again, I know for a fact my dog's not going to put me in crisis.
I was going to say the same, but, you know, I do have a very rambunctious Bernese Mountain Dog that has decided he loves to eat my furniture. So he can be a trigger for me on occasion. you know, and let's talk about the other side of this for a second, if we can. Because when you were in that moment, when you were loading your shotgun, Eddie, and you did you call your friend or did your friend call you?
He called me. It was kind of an eerie thing. We've talked about it a couple of years after the fact. And he was just kind of sitting there. He said something like hit him and said, hey, I need to reach out to Eddie. He said he doesn't know why it came up, but said something says I need to reach out to him. And he called me. And for whatever reason, I happened to just, you know, I hear the phone and I saw his name. For whatever reason, I picked it up. I mean, I could easily have just not picked it up, but I saw his name and I picked it up. The part that I didn't share in the article, just because it didn't really fit the whole theme, is one of the things that was going on at the time is I was engaged to another girl who I just found out was cheating on me. So that's what kind of pushed me over the edge. So so when I saw his name pop up, it was he kind of knew some of the things going on, the suspects, and like me suspecting things. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I was like, I just need to take this guy's phone call.
Well, I'm glad that you did. And you know, that's, I guess, my next question for both you and Mike is that how do we be that person, right? What do we do so that our friends know that they can call on us or that we call on them, right? We won't always maybe get that spidey sense, but what can we do to be each other's support system? We talk about, you know, how important it is to be able to reach out when you're in crisis, but what do we do as gun owners to be there, you know, and to be that shoulder, to be that rock for others when they're needed?
I think the biggest thing is just, you know, be consistent. It's, have you ever heard of you have your 6 p.m. friends and your 3 a.m. friends? Have you ever heard that whole analogy? So, I mean, try to be for people who are listening, doesn't know what that means. It's some people you can call at 6 p.m. and they'll answer, but they won't answer 3 a.m. call. You have some people you can call at 3 a.m. no matter what's going on, and they'll take your phone call. So just be consistent. And I mean, I'm not trying to say you have to be the 3 a.m. friend for everyone. That's not possible. But like, be consistent and be out there so that like everyone, like the people that are close to you, know that like you are able to take that phone call and reach out to them. And part of doing that is just reach out to them. Even if it's just checking in with them. Hey, how's it going? If you're already hanging out with them, these are your friends and stuff like that, then you're already kind of doing that. You're being consistent in their life.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is important, and yes, everything that Eddie said, right? And don't be afraid to talk about it, right? Because you talking about it with your friend isn't going to cause your friend to go spiral. As a matter of fact, they may be asking for that without asking for it, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things that I this is why it's so important for me, not only to get gun owners to start having the mentality of, okay, guns come with the responsibility of learning the safety rules. They also come to the responsibility of understanding what you can and cannot do in a defensive shooting and what's going to happen. But as a gun owner, we all need to talk about our better mental health and suicide prevention plan. Like that just becomes a natural thing, just like the four rules, you know, defensive shooting. And I think that if we get the gun companies, which we have been doing, right, more and more gun companies are coming forward, manufacturers saying, yeah, that's a normal part of gun ownership, right? Then it just becomes second nature for us. And we're starting with a base foundation. So that new gun owner literally has that in their head. Like, oh, it's okay for us to talk about this. Because Cam, let's face it, like Eddie, you too, right? We've been around guns a long time. And there was a time when you just didn't talk about these things, right? Like it was, I don't want to age myself for some listeners, but like, it just reminds me of Twister in the F5. I don't know if you ever saw that movie, but you know, they bring up the F5 and they're like, we don't talk about an F5. And it was like, we didn't talk about suicide and we didn't talk about mental health. And now we can change that because we're doing it ourselves.
That's right. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, groups like Walk the Talk America, Hold My Guns, the Gunshot Project, you know, and we've been highlighting some of these efforts at bearing arms because, I mean, look, I'll be honest with you guys. This isn't, you know, the most popular story. This is not the most popular topic. You know, it's not exactly clickbait, right? But it is important. And that's one of the reasons why we talk so much about this, because, you know, look, we have a mental health crisis in this country. There are almost every state in the union has a shortage of, you know, counselors, inpatient beds for those in acute crisis. And I don't know what it's going to take for the politicians to fix that. But while we advocate for those fixes to be made, we can't just wait, right? We have to do what we can do ourselves to keep ourselves and each other safe. And this is one of the ways that we do it. And talking about these things, I think, is a way to, again, but you're right, to normalize these types of conversations. So, again, Eddie, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. And I hope that folks, you know, listen, even if you never, you know, had your dark night of the soul, great, first of all. But it doesn't mean it can't happen to you in the future. You know, this is something that as I've gotten older, I've started to kind of realize that, you know, I'm okay. Like, my son passed away a couple of years ago. I didn't have any suicidal impulses. My wife's a stage 4 cancer patient. I'm her rock. I generally am okay. But, you know, listen, I mean, over the next couple of years, it's very possible that my life will completely collapse from what it is today. And I don't know what the future will hold. There may very well be a time where I am struggling. Thankfully, I know that I've got those 3 a.m. friends that I can call on. And Eddie, Mike, it might even be you if my 3 a.m. friends don't pick up the phone call. But I know that there may come a point in time where I do need to talk to somebody. And so that's why I'm talking now and trying to encourage folks to do the same. Right. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you a beta male. It's not about any of that. Right. Real men and real women, grown adults, responsible adults. We want to take care of others. But we also have to take care of ourselves. And sometimes that means reaching out for help. And that doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you a sissy. It makes you alive, right? It makes you here. It makes you present. And that's what we want, is for you to be here and present for years to come.
Yeah, what you just said was beautiful, Cam. And it's right. That's right. We want to, and there's an expression like, don't wait till stage 4, right? Let's get healthy at stage 1. And that means, like, the longer you bottle it in, if you need to talk to somebody, the worse it's going to get. It's not, it doesn't usually get better when something is bothering you. And if we start early, then you don't have to worry about anything, right? Because it's all part of the plan, especially as a gun owner, as most of us are, you know, that are listening to this, or all of us are probably. But that's why it's so important. Let's get upstream to prevent the unpredictable.
That's right. Any last thoughts, anything that we didn't talk about that you think is important to get out there?
The main thing is, like I said, just keep talking, reaching out to people. And then the normalization, I think it can't be overstated. If you're in public, realize that you are an ambassador for the Second Amendment, regardless of if you think you are or not. One of the things, I mean, I know we all sometimes get a laugh at them, but like, the obnoxious bumper stickers, you know, like, keep honking, I'm reloading, stuff like that. Like, you realize, like, you are the person that, like, maybe the ambassador of Second Amendment, that's maybe you're the reason people think all gun owners are crazy. I had an interaction literally, I think today's Monday, last Friday at the barbershop. So I had a friend come in, he was a cop friend, and we're talking about trying to get the same thing, get stuff working in the local police departments, and we're rolling. I got some meetings coming up with sheriffs, so that stuff is working well. But a guy comes in, overheard us talking. He's like, man, I hate guns. And I was like, and the one guy, the barber, you know, he was like, well, you know, whatever, have that opinion. He's pretty good about that stuff. But kept going. The guy kept going about stuff. And I finally said, hey, man, I get it. You probably hate guns because they kill people. You don't want to see people die and stuff like that. I was like, I get you, man. I don't want to see my friends die, and I don't want to see negative outcomes of stuff. And he was kind of taken aback. I was like, I don't know how to respond to this, because you're like taking my bluster out of this. And I'm not saying you have to go and like be that ambassador, someone who's anti-gun, but like just realize that what you say to people, how you portray yourself kind of reflects back on the Second Amendment and the gun community as a whole. And it matters a lot, especially if we're trying to change this and like, you know, paint in the world that we're not all these crazy hillbillies out to kill everyone.
Yeah, and it's very easy to judge a book by its cover, right? Says one crazy looking hillbilly to another. although I live in the Piedmont, so I guess I'm a Peedbilly, which is even weirder. But I think that you're right about that. And, you know, and again, there are so many forces out there who are trying to denormalize gun ownership, but are trying to demonize gun owners, and they're trying to demonize Second Amendment advocates, right? I'll never forget my friend Ryan Petty, who lost his daughter Elena at Parkland. Murray from Newtown Action Alliance at one point had tweeted out, you know, if you don't support an assault ban, you're in favor of murdering children. And he replied to her, do you think that means you think I am in favor of murdering children? Absolutely, she said. Here's somebody whose daughter died, but just because he doesn't agree with a gun ban as the solution, you know, all of a sudden now he's in favor of child murder. And that, I think, is what the most vociferous anti-gun activists want to portray us as. Mm-hmm. So you're right. When we can just simply remind non-gun owners that we are human, that we do care about these things, it's not just that we place the gun over everything, that the reason why we own firearms is because we value life, because we love people, we want to see the people that we love live long, healthy, productive lives. That is a perspective that they simply don't get. Right, Mike? I mean, at the Aspen Ideas Festival, what you said probably wasn't shocking to a lot of gun owners, but it was incredibly shocking to the bulk of that audience. The guy in the barbershop never heard that from a gun owner before, because most gun owners probably wouldn't have ever responded to him, right? They would not have tried to engage in a good faith conversation with that guy. And so you're right. We do have a role to play as ambassadors for our right to keep and bear arms, as ambassadors for other gun owners. And hopefully, you know, we won't always be able to have a productive conversation with everybody that we engage with. But I think that you can change minds. I think you can change hearts, at least open those minds a little bit. And Eddie and Mike, I thank you both for the efforts that you are doing to save lives and to open minds out there. Walk the Talk America, WTTA.org is the website. Will you guys come back again soon?
Anytime.
Yeah, happy to be on.
Awesome. Eddie, Mike, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Cam.
Thanks, man.
My sincere thanks to Eddie and to Mike for joining me on the program today, as well as all of the work that they're doing with Walk the Talk America. WTTA.org, that is the website. And again, please, if you are struggling, please take advantage of the help that is there. Know that people are there who care about you. And we want you here. So WTTA.org. And of course, if you are in the midst of a crisis right now, please call the National Suicide Lifeline at 988. Now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Illinois, where, again, you know, lawmakers cracking down on legal gun owners, right? At the same time, going soft on violent criminals with things like the Safety Act, which leads to headlines like this. Decatur gang members involved in a shooting get probation in a plea deal. Yeah. Meanwhile, if you're a otherwise lawful gun owner who, you know, possesses a illegal large capacity magazine, you might not be facing probation. You might actually do more time behind bars than a admitted gang member who was involved in a shooting. A 20-year-old Michonne Swanson, given 18 months probation. Quantavis Bradford, sentenced to 24 months probation. Now, both were given 180-day jail sentences, but those were basically erased because of credit for time served while they were awaiting trial. Both Swanson and Bradford are allegedly gang members in Decatur, Illinois. They were also apparently involved in a shooting targeting a rival gang. The shooting actually led to a city school being locked down. This was September 19th of last year. Officers have been called out about 2:20 that afternoon after shots were fired coming from a passing car a couple of blocks away from Hope Academy, which was locked down for a time while officers looked for whoever the suspects were. Decatur police said the area was targeted by the shots, known as a hangout for Decatur's East Side gang, which was feuding with a rival South Side gang known as the Moes. Affidavit signed by Officer Clayton Zill said police identified the vehicle as being driven by known Southside member Michael Swanson, his twin brother Michonne riding with him, as was Bradford. Michael Swanson accused of trying to flee by ramming a squad car after the car was cornered by cops. He then fled on foot but was chased down and arrested, as was his brother and Bradford. Michonne Johnson has denied charges of aggravated and reckless discharge of a firearm, as well as counts of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Counts of possession of a firearm by a gang member. Meanwhile, the other two did take a plea deal, given that, again, the probation sentence after admitting the admitted unlawful use of a weapon. The other charges were dismissed. A check of Swanson's record shows that he had only recently been released from prison at the time of the shooting after serving 18 months on a November 2022 conviction for the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Yeah, so how about that? More time for the previous charge than what he got for his involvement in a shooting in Decatur. According to Jacob Swanson's criminal record, he had been released on parole from the Lincoln Correctional Center 4 days before the shooting incident after being sentenced to 18 months in prison after being convicted of unlawful use of a weapon. So here again, you've got repeat offenders, you've got violent offenders, you've got known gang members. And you've got prosecutors who are giving them a slap on the wrist, cutting them plea deals, sending them back out on the streets with very little time behind bars. Again, basically time served. And while the state of Illinois is treating violent offenders with kid gloves, oh, they're cracking down on lawful gun owners trying to exercise their right to keep and bear arms. All right. Today's Armed Citizen story, Oakland, California, where a homeowner shot and killed a burglar during an attempted home invasion, according to police. This happened just a couple of days ago. I think it was early Friday morning. Actually, I take it back. It was a couple of weeks ago, March 15th. 39-year-old Charles Calloway was the intruder who was killed in that home invasion. His alleged accomplice, 38-year-old David Washington, has now been charged with murder under the theory that he provoked the homeowner who killed Calloway into using deadly force to protect himself. Washington, at last report, is in the Santa Rita jail in Dublin, California. According to authorities, the pair were both living in San Francisco at the time, but they went to East Oakland to rob a homeowner there, allegedly forcing their way into the residence through a back door about 10:30 on the night of March 15th. They ended up in a shootout with a resident. The resident shot in the foot, thankfully not a life-threatening injury. Calloway passed away from his injuries in the home. Washington then fled the area, but was identified as a suspect through, quote, digital data, video surveillance, and witness statements. He was arrested in San Francisco on March 25th. He has denied any involvement in this attack, but we will see what happens going on with his case in the future. Thankfully, again, the homeowner who defended himself against the two armed robbers, not facing any charges. Oakland police have already determined that that was a justifiable use of force. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, while unable to do the right thing, a woman in Houston, Texas, who came to the aid of a baby wandering alone near a very busy freeway. I know I've talked about this on the program before, but when I was 2 years old, in a very similar situation, we had just moved to Oklahoma City. I was playing in the backyard with our new puppy. Somehow I managed to get the gate open while my mom was making lunch. She comes out to say, hey, lunch is ready. I'm not there. The dog's not there. She's freaking out. They found me and my dog about a half mile away walking down a four-lane road right there in the middle. I was crying. I was two. You know, come on. I didn't know where I was. Couldn't give the people who found me my address because we just moved there. So thankfully, the dog that we had, which was also pretty new at the time, walked home. And the two women who found me were able to follow my dog and return me to my mom. So anytime I run across a story like this, like, it does kind of hit me right in the feels. Lori Pena, mom of six, she was on her way to work. Her husband's in the car, and they spot this toddler on the side of the Gulf Freeway. So they do a U-ey, get out of the car. They found the toddler on the side street that leads into the feeder road. There was another couple who had seen what's going on, too, and they had stopped as well. Pena called the authorities about 2 o'clock Wednesday afternoon, hoping that they could to help, you know, return the child to the parents there. The officers came out, picked up the child. Toddler told authorities he lived in a nearby apartment complex, but again, he didn't know what unit. He said he'd been left at home with his six-year-old brother. That is disturbing. Pena says she was relieved that she took action before something worse happened. She says, you know, he could have been picked up by just anybody. And, you know, something bad could have happened to him. Child's father showed up looking for his son. The child was reportedly found to be in good health. His home was deemed clean and safe. Child Protective Services was contacted for further follow-up, but hopefully this was a one-time incident that will not be happening again in the future. And thankfully, again, this child is okay because of the actions of Lori Pena, her husband, and the other good Samaritans there who saw this child in need and stopped rather than continue on their way. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Cody Wisniewski is going to be with us, the new CEO of the Firearms Policy Coalition Action Foundation. We're going to be talking with Cody. Of course, you know, he's been with FPC Action Foundation for quite some time, but Cody does have a new promotion. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about some of the latest lawsuits and the latest in some of the lawsuits that FPC and FPC Action Foundation are involved in. So be sure to tune in for that, and be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today for the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. We're going to give you exclusive content you won't find anywhere else because your support matters. And it truly does make a difference. So we want to say thank you. And that's how we do it. Exclusive news stories and commentary you won't find anywhere else. All right. Enjoy the rest of your Monday as well as a Monday can be enjoyed. We'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.